From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on December 16th when Republicans in the Monroe County Legislature chose new leadership. President Jeff Adair and Majority Leader Steve Tucciarello were term limited out of office, so Republicans chose Anthony Danielli as their new president, Brian Marinetti as the new majority leader. 1 week later, Democrats did the same on their own scale. Minority Leader Kerry Andrews was term limited out of office, and the Democrats elected Cindy Kaley to step into that role. So on Connections, we thought it would be helpful to bring the old and the new together, both parties. We invited outgoing leadership and incoming leadership to come on the program today, talk about county business, and maybe more importantly, we thought we could talk about how the parties could build a healthy relationship going forward. The Democrats said yes immediately. From the Republicans, we were told they would try to make it work, but then finally last night we heard they could not make anyone available. So it's just the Democrats this hour, unfortunately, and that's no offense to Kerry Andrews or Cindy Kaley, but I had hoped to bring the parties together in studio, and perhaps sometime soon we will be able to do that. So with that, let me go ahead and welcome the guests who could make it today. Kerry Andrews is a labor relations specialist with NYSET, and that's it. Strange to introduce you as not the leader of the Democrats in Monroe County Legislature. How are you?
I'm well, Evan. Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Also here is Cindy Kaley, and Cindy is the leader of the Monroe County Democrats in the Legislature. Nice to have you back here, Cindy.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And it is a little strange being leader at this point. So.
Well, I'm sure you'll get used to it. Is it strange, Kerry, not being a part of the legislature?
Yeah, this is really the first week or so. And actually, I think the Monroe County Legislature has a meeting tonight, so it'll be my first time not attending a regularly scheduled meeting. And it's different, but, you know, the time is growing on me, having some more free time.
And, Kerry, you're someone who spent years, I know, working with Republicans or trying to work more effectively with Republicans. And we can be, you know, I think we can face the fact that Democrats have been in the minority. Republicans don't need your votes, and they can get a lot done without your votes, and that's generally how it does happen. A lot of votes are along party lines, the recent budget, of course, on party lines. But today, I was disappointed they didn't come in. I wanted to bring the parties together. And, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you didn't seem surprised that they're not here.
Well, I spent 10 years in the county legislature, so there were many, many, many times and many experiences that I've had where bipartisan things did not work out, or where we had hoped something could go in that fashion, and the Republicans didn't want to join us on it. As you know, certainly, Evan, and your listeners know, so many of our proposals are defeated along party lines or never made it to the legislature for full contemplation or review anyway. So it doesn't surprise me that they don't want to participate. It's a little disheartening because it is a new year, so certainly I think it's an opportunity for the new leadership to work together, and I would have hoped that that could have happened. But, you know, I don't want to be totally dismissive. There were a few things certainly over my time that we did do together. Just overall, it certainly is a very partisan environment in the county.
Did you feel respected by Republican leadership?
Yes, I felt respected, sometimes respected and ignored, or my points of view weren't considered. But, you know, personally, I felt respected from the people in the Republican leadership.
Okay. And, I'm just looking at some of the early reaction from listeners who, you know, Caleb on Twitter, for example, he says, I'm feeling an absence of loyal opposition in our country. And what can Democrats do differently going forward, at least at the local level? Have you talked to Cindy about, you know, I mean, Cindy is not a stranger to how county politics works. You've been in office since 2008.
2008.
All right. So, you know, but Kerry, have you felt the need to at least say, you know, what can we do to make it so that leadership doesn't feel ignored?
Sure. I think that, you know, it's really up to the new leaders to determine their working relationships. I'm a big believer in building relationships, and that's sometimes what helps people to cut through when there is a political difference. And so I know that Cindy is going to do that with her counterparts to the best of her ability and to as much as they're willing to participate. I think that helped me in my time being able to work with Republicans sometimes when we had a collegial working relationship and we were able to just take each other as, you know, real people and laugh sometimes and forget about the politics of whatever situation it was that we were dealing with and just be real people with each other. And that's when things really tended to get done the most. So hopefully they'll be able to find their way to do that too.
Cindy, how's your relationship with new leaders on the Republican side? Marinetti, Anthony Danielli?
We've already had a first initial meeting that was before the first of the year. And that was a good meeting. I think that we set some guidelines, revisited what has happened in the past and how we'd like to see things going forward. And I think in terms of working in a bipartisan fashion, you want to foster it right from the beginning because that's how it's going to grow. If we don't start off with some issues, even if they're small, that we can both support, then it's too late later on. someone had said, there's always time enough going forward to be bipartisan on things. And I say the time is now. And so that's what we hope to do.
Is it difficult in your position because, as we said, they really don't need your votes. I mean, they're going to pass budgets without your votes. They will be able to have success legislatively in large part without your votes. Does that make it difficult for you?
The short answer, sure. I think that you have to always consider how you're dialoguing with people in the first place to get something done, and looking for any avenue that you can that is going to get support from the other side of the aisle. I think the one thing that is missing that I would hope to change going forward is that as a body, it's difficult to have conversations about issues. We tend to have those conversations within our separate caucuses and then come back. And as you said, if we need votes from that side for our issue, we may not get them. Coming up is a good opportunity for us to be outside of the legislature and look at different issues. And that's the upcoming conference for the New York State Association of Counties called NYSAC. And it's basically a full conference across the state that's in Albany every year. And it gives us the opportunity to work outside of our offices, get to know, certainly we have a lot of new legislators, get to know them and what their feelings are on different issues. They in turn, and we in turn, get to hear what other counties are doing and how they feel about the same issues that we have.
All right, we're about to talk child care, and Cindy's been outspoken about child care and some of the cuts in county budget and some of the other things that did pass. But if you want to join the conversation this hour with just the Democrats, the outgoing leader, Carrie Andrews, and the incoming leader, Cindy Kaley, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. That number is toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And if you just tuned in and you heard Cindy sort of laughing at just the Democrats, and we're not taunting, or this is not the host only booking the Democrats. We do hope to have Republican leadership on a future program. They declined our invitation today. No one was available. So, again, we do hope that will change. And, Cheryl DeNolfo, twice during her campaign, was on this program a couple of times and has given plenty of time. So I don't think that will be an issue going forward. I would like to bring Democrats and Republicans together going forward. I am curious to know, Carrie Andrews, about a year ago, I talked to a lot of people in Democratic leadership locally, and your name came up a lot. A lot of people wanted you to run for county executive. You chose not to run for county executive. First of all, are you done with politics, or is the door open for future runs in different offices?
Well, that's a good question. The first time I ran, it was not like I had a lifelong goal of serving in political office. For me, there was an opportunity. The time was right in my life. I had a group of friends who were willing to take this risk with me and put together a campaign and learn all about campaigning, going door to door. And the voters, were receptive to that, and I won my first race in a primary, and then have won a few times since then, and have really enjoyed the opportunities I've had to serve the public and to work as an elected official at the county level. So I will not rule out certainly remaining involved in politics or running for something in the future. For me, those decisions are huge. I don't make life decisions like that easily, and I don't take them lightly. So it would have to be something that fits very well in my life and is something that I feel I would be able to do at a high level and be successful at.
So you decided not to run, and Sandy Frankel, of course, ran for a second time. And I don't think anybody can question her work ethic. She clearly was out there working very hard. She was defeated soundly. And I wonder, do you have any insight into why you think Democrats have had a hard time winning that office and kind of carving into the Republican majority? Republicans have really, really dominated in many ways in politics locally.
Sure. It's been tough for us. I don't think any Democrat would dispute that. It's been tough. A lot of it in the county legislature level, has to deal with the districts that are drawn. We've proposed independent redistricting. That's been defeated by the Republican majority. So they are sort of gerrymandered districts that do tilt towards a Republican advantage. So that puts us as an underdog going into most of the races just from the get-go, which means we have to find ideally suited great candidates, of which we did have a lot this year, to run against usually Republican opponents who have already established themselves a little bit in their towns, either serving on a town or village board or on a school board. And so they already have some name recognition. And so we have to overcome that. And then we have to overcome usually a financial disadvantage as well. So it's tough. Like, the stars have to align very well for us in those races. We can do it, certainly. We've done it in the past. We've held suburban seats in the past, and I certainly think we will again in the future. The other issue we have in the local years is just the turnout is so much lower. I mean, this year, 2016, everyone's really keyed in already on the presidential race, and the turnout will be far superior than what it was last year, and then most likely what it will be in 2017. And so we need to find a way to get voters excited and increase our Democratic turnout in the local years, too. Because if that happened, if we had the same sort of turnout we will have this year, last year, then I think the races would have gone entirely differently.
Well, Cindy Cayley, you know, you've been focused on a number of issues in your legislative career, but two that come up that I've seen come up often are child care cuts and child care funding. And, you know, I'm just kind of going back through my notes on taxes, fees, chargebacks. You spoke, at a Maplewood Association meeting in December 2012 when new chargebacks and fees were coming out. And you told that audience, a chargeback is a tax. You know, you don't have to call it a tax, but these new fees are taxes. And so, but Republicans, if they were here, they would probably say, well, we're winning elections because we have had a record that people like, that have been effective, et cetera, and that the community has heard those messages and have viewed our record, and that's why we're winning these large majorities. That's why we're winning county executive. So let me start there. We had just had the outgoing county executive say her legacy is a stable and flat property tax rate. Is that the legacy of the last 12 years?
Well, it's been a flat tax rate, but the tax bills continue to go up. And it makes it very simple for people to understand that the tax rate is flat, therefore their taxes haven't gone up. But every chargeback that is on that bill, you're right, is a form of a tax. And those taxes have gone up. So things are going up somehow. And, you know, we've always said, too, a number of people are not as familiar with their tax bills as they might be because they don't look at them every year. If they hold a mortgage and everything is in escrow, you don't see that tax amount really until the end of the year when they say, well, we're going to give you back a refund because you have too much money in your escrow account or you don't have enough. Therefore, you either got to make the difference or your tax bill goes up monthly. And for people to actually look at their tax bill, it's confusing.
It's not written in a way. If I were designing a new tax bill, I think I would make it a little bit more easily digested, I would say.
Yeah, I think even a tax bill on its simplest level is probably hard to understand. But people do not see that. And they concentrate. It's a good message that is said consistently. When you consistently say the same message over and over and over again, that is what people come away and believe. And that it's not because anyone is ignorant or stupid or doesn't pay attention. That's because that's what sticks in our brains. That's the message. And they've been successful. But my tax bill has gone up, so.
Well, and so has mine. I've been a county resident throughout the entire last 12 years as well. And I do pay more in various ways. But so, Carrie Andrews, do you agree? Is that the legacy of the last 12 years?
Well, I would say certainly taxes have not remained flat over 12 years. There's no mathematical way that would be a true statement. I understand what she says about the flat tax rate, certainly, but you have to look at the whole bill. The chargebacks have increased. It's something like 300%, $40 million. You know, we've talked a lot about this over the years, and there's just a differing of an opinion. But I think if you had asked a mathematician, she would say that taxes certainly have increased in Monroe County during the last county executive's tenure. I think to only focus in on that as her legacy would be short-sighted because we have to look at the LDCs that this county executive created, several of them. Especially the M3S and the UTC LDC, which have been the object of investigations for years now and have cost the taxpayers hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in legal costs. That all fell under the tenure of the county executive, Maggie Brooks, and I think that's part of her legacy as well.
Okay, and it was at least, 4 or 5 years ago that you proposed an ethics office Here I say you and the Democrats, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. It's 2011 we proposed the creation of an Office of Public Integrity.
Okay, and what happened at the time?
Boy, at the time, it was soundly defeated by the Republican majority. I remember going to a committee meeting where they grilled me and thought it was impractical and that we didn't need one since we already had this, quote, whistleblower hotline. And they came up with a whole bunch of other reasons and voted against it, and it was defeated.
They told you it was impractical?
To the best of my recollection. It wasn't necessary. It was redundant.
Okay. And does anybody ever call the whistleblower hotline? I'm not asking that flippantly. I'm actually curious.
We've asked those questions, and we were told that it was confidential information, so they couldn't tell us.
So if anybody's ever called it, we don't know.
That is correct. That's
right. Has anything ever resulted from someone calling the county's whistleblower hotline?
We wouldn't know.
It certainly doesn't look like it, right?
I think even to that point, we're not even given numbers of how many calls may have been in a year's time, and how many calls were acted on, and how many calls were closed, or how many calls were just, you know, a crank call or what have you. We have nothing. We're told we can't have that information.
Okay. But 5 years later, the new county executive, Cheryl DeNolfo, had said during her campaign, and seems now to be intent on following through with that idea, that creating an Office of Public Integrity, essentially an ethics office, that would do, I guess what, Cindy? What's your understanding of what the new ethics office is going to do?
Well, we don't know.
Until
we don't
it's
fully
established. What should it do?
I think that we would strongly hope that it would follow the recommendations that were made in my colleague's initial referral, initial legislation back in 2011. That number one, that no one sitting in that office or on that advisory board would be an elected official from either party or be employed at the county level. It would be, forgot the exact language, I mean, a very independent.
Right. Independent.
A non-stacked deck.
Right.
Exactly.
Good. Independent.
Yes. Yeah. And that it wouldn't just cover a whistleblower hotline type of function, that it would actually cover all of the county's functions, as well as any entity that we do business with that might come into scrutiny. Certainly the LDCs would be a part of that.
Okay. Carrie, what do you think it should do? Essentially, what Cindy said, I mean, is that what was proposed 5 years ago?
Yeah, we proposed that it be an independent office, that it not report to the county executive, which would certainly differentiate it from the whistleblower hotline, that it report to an independent board, that be appointed, and make policy recommendations as it sees fit, and review and handle any complaints from county employees or people who do business with the county. Certainly also have the same oversight for the LDCs and other things established by the county.
Do we have an ethics problem at the county level?
Oh, Evan, do we have an ethics problem? Well, there have certainly been a lot of concerns over the years, and it almost
you're not even in county government anymore. You should be able to answer this more bluntly, right?
Well, I believe there are so many good people, and I sincerely believe there are so many good people in county government and government all
on
over
both
the
sides.
Place. Right, correct.
Sides.
And I don't want to say that there's like a general ethics problem.
Sure.
What I feel is, regardless of that, I think it's important to have an independent office or body established that could review any complaints or problems that kind of come up.
Even if we had a pristine county government.
Exactly. Because anywhere you work, there are going to be problems that arise. And so employees ought to have a place to go where they feel safe and comfortable and don't feel the fed of retribution to report concerns they have.
Okay. And so before I start taking your phone calls here, Cindy, going forward then, assuming this Office of Integrity gets rolled out and does what it's supposed to do, and assuming that the new county executive, Ms. DeNolfo, follows through on plans to at least unwind a couple of LDCs, which came up in the campaigns, et cetera, what do you expect is going to happen this year? I mean, how quickly can we see that office get set up? How quickly can we see LDCs kind of wound down? It's not an overnight process.
Well, I don't think that it will happen quickly, but what I'd like to see happen quickly is the beginning of the dialogue that it takes to do something this big and an input from both sides of the aisle versus one side of the aisle or just from the new executive. I mean, this is a very positive point that she has brought to everyone's attention going forward. And it's like we're excited to work on this, but you want to be a part of it. And hopefully that will happen. This will not be a short-term job to get it going, nor would ending LDC boards and their involvement, it's a little bit more complicated. So that's going to take time. And I really can't tell you how long that might take.
In just a second, we're going to talk child care funding, especially at the county level. But let me grab a phone call. Sue in Rochester. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. First of all, I think legislating in Monroe County is like a big black hole. I feel that we don't know nearly as much as we should about what's going on. And in fact, feel that the Water Authority is the de facto real legislature in Monroe County. Having said that, Comptroller DiNapoli issued a report on Monroe County. And could you be very specific about his criticisms of what is wrong or what he found to be wrong in Monroe County?
What did Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller, think is wrong in Monroe County? Sue, thanks for the phone call. I don't have that report in front of me offhand. Mm-hmm. Cindy, Carrie?
Yes, Sue, I'm not exactly sure what report you're referring to. I know there have been several audits actually out of the comptroller's office that have been highly critical of the county's operations.
I think his office called it the most fiscally stressed in the state.
That's true, and
that's
an additional report.
Okay.
So there have been the audits that were done into the LDCs, which found significant problems, which have then led to the prosecutions. But then you're right, he also did issue several years now in a row, the counties ranked either at the top or very close to the top of the state's most fiscally stressed counties,
and
DiNapoli's office.
If I recall correctly as well, part of the complaint from the comptroller's office in that report is that there is not a long-term sort of structural fiscal fix, that there's going to be one-shots probably in the future, or at least that's what his review found have kind of plugged the holes in the last decade or so. And County Executive Maggie Brooks at the time said, look, what he probably wants is he wants a tax increase, and we're just not going to do that, and that's what would satisfy him. Carrie, at the time, did that make sense to you? Do you buy that? Do you agree with County Executive Brooks at the time saying the comptroller probably just wants a tax increase? That would fix the fiscal instability, but we're not going to go that direction?
No, I don't think I would phrase it quite that way. And in fact, I found, despite years of debating this with the county, us coming out and saying the county is fiscally stressed, you know, it's on the brink of bankruptcy or it doesn't have any assets left and there's no fund balance. Those are things that Democrats have said numerous times and pointed out the county's lack of long-term financial planning. And the county would come back with, well, they just want us to raise taxes, or no, that's not true. The budget is totally balanced, et cetera, et cetera. So this past year when preparing for the budget, it was just so bizarre to find a document that itself had to assert its own financial position when it was in a dispute with a labor union, one of its labor unions. And it itself then quoted essentially from DiNapoli's report and said, yes, we are the highest, most fiscally stressed county in the state. And it said that we're on the verge of not being able to pay our bills and that we have to rely on one-shot revenues to balance our budgets. And it agreed with all of the assertions that we have made for years. I mean, it felt kind of validating to have them put those thoughts to paper. So I don't really think there's a dispute over the county's financial condition. It's up for the new team and the new county executive to figure out how to fix that long term.
All right, a couple of things here. Trish on Twitter just says, briefly, can you have your guests explain what the LDCs even are and do? And I understand that question and complaint. Sometimes I rifle right through the alphabet soup of LDCs without a full explanation. Cindy or Carrie, you want to offer a brief explanation for what LDCs are created to do?
I'll start and Carrie can finish if I miss anything. LDCs are local development corporations that are not public, public government. And they have been used for a number of years in the state because as they enter into a contract agreement with a county or any other government, they have access to lower interest funding for projects that are coming forward. So the object is that you can take that entity and they can borrow money at a lower rate than a government can. But it also can be problematic because they do not come under any scrutiny. They're a private concern. Therefore, they're not covered under the FOIL laws. And so you can't just say, we want to see your books. They have to cooperate with that. And then when you have a long-term contract with an LDC and something happens to that LDC or the LDC or the contracts underneath it, the government then has to be responsible for the debt. They say they're not, but we are.
Sure. And some of the concerns with LDCs are, you know, first of all, is their billing legit? Is this, you know, above board? And do they become a place to find lucrative jobs and lucrative work for friends, donors, et cetera? Both of my guests, Cindy, the new Democratic minority leader in the legislature, Carrie Andrews, the outgoing, are nodding at that. That's been some of the concerns. I've just had an email from Mark and just wants to know if your guests are concerned about patronage and about the former county executive's new job at RTS. We covered this on the program recently. The county executive has a new job at RTS, essentially replaced her salary for a job that did not exist before. She applied for the job. There are other candidates. She said she was highly qualified and thinks that the job makes a whole lot of sense for the community, that she's going to do great work for the community. Carrie Andrews, do you care? Do you care about Maggie Brooks' new job? Cindy Kaley, do you care about that job?
I care about our new job, sure. I listened to your program a couple weeks ago, I think, when you talked about patronage and whether or not people should care, and it seemed like resoundingly the public did care about
this. There's no question, based on the results we've seen, the public does care. Now, she did say that only the media cares, and I would highly dispute that from what we have heard.
But yeah. Right. I think that that's true. People have certainly been talking about it. You know, I understand that she was not interested in being in retiring. She wants to continue to work. My understanding of the pension system in New York, she probably needs to get a couple more years before she'd be eligible to retire and get a pension without a penalty, the way that system works. And so she wants to continue to work in government. She certainly has experience and a lot of qualifications to continue to work in government. I think people take issue with the way it happened, and it just looks like, unfortunately, perception is the problem in a lot of these cases. I mean, there's the appearance of, you know, the Water Authority, the RGRTA now, and the county, just a very close network of close Republican allies that wind up in these positions. So, you know, I think it's a valid point for the public to discuss. You know, I wish her well in a new position. I hope that it's a good fit and that she brings a lot of value to that organization.
Are you worried that LDCs could become havens for people as sort of favor jobs, you know, jobs, lucrative positions to reward people who are donors or close in some way?
Yeah, I think that's one of the large concerns we had with them, and that's some of the issues with the contractors and the subcontractors that have come into play throughout the course of the investigations. In leaving county government, leaving my position as a legislator, I'm incredibly proud that, first, I voted against, as did all the Democrats, we voted against the creation of the M3S LDC for a lot of the reasons that have now come up as real issues with that, and that we proposed, I'm probably not exaggerating to say, at least 20 different initiatives to rein in the LDCs, to provide the sort of legislative oversight that they don't naturally come with, to protect taxpayer money. And so that's certainly part of the Democrats' legacy on the county legislature, is trying to be very proactive to protect taxpayer money and investments, especially when we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, and public safety infrastructure and communications infrastructure like these two LDCs are responsible for.
Cindy, do you care about Maggie Brooks' new job?
Well, I echo what Carrie has said. I mean, being a woman, you don't want anyone to just assume that when you finish one position that you're going to be finished and you don't want to go on to something else or realign a career until you're ready to retire. So I do wish her well. I think the timing and it has raised questions. And I hope that she does a good job in the job that she does, because it's a service to the whole county, so we want it to go smoothly. And I just like to point out too that she's also being able to. I don't want to frame this the wrong way, because I think it's a positive move, but it have happened a little ironically at the end of her term as county executive that she is the current president of NYSAC, which is the New York State Association of Counties. It just happened to happen to occur that someone had retired or moved on to a different state, and she was next in line for the presidency. And as long as she was in office 3 months before, then you're allowed to sit for that coming year. So she'll still be very closely tied with county issues as well on the state level. And so I hope that we get a good working relationship with her in that as well.
All right, I'm late for a break. Beth and John on the phones, we're coming to you. I haven't even gotten to child care yet, so we've got a lot to get to in our last 20, 25 minutes or so with Carrie Andrews and Cindy Kaley, Democrats from the Monroe County Legislature. Carrie, just term limited out, so she is merely a labor relations specialist with NYSET. Cindy Kaley, the new minority leader in the legislature. We invited Republicans, if you're just joining us, we invited Republican leadership a while ago for this program, and they had said they had hoped to find someone to join us, but emailed last night and said that no one was available, unfortunately. So short break, and more of your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, a walker wheelchair hybrid, an LED smart rug, a cane that can help someone who has difficulty lifting their feet. This kind of research with effective access technology is happening in our community. We'll tell you all about it. It's part of our dialogue on disability, and it continues next hour.
Hello, my name's Walton Goggins. Nice to meet you. I'm from Lithia Springs, Georgia.
That is what the actor Walton Goggins sounded like when he got to Los Angeles as a 19-year-old hoping to become an actor. Then he got some tough advice in acting class.
The first thing he handed me was a book of sonnets by Shakespeare, and he said, you need to lose that accent.
The star of Justified and the new movie The Hateful Eight, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I get to your phone calls, and we'll finish the hour with your feedback on this, I just want to make sure we ask the current leadership for the Democrats in the Monroe County Legislature, represented today by Cindy Kaley. And Cindy, you have talked about child care funding at the county level. On this program recently, we had a chance to talk to Ms. Brooks before she left office, Joe Morelli, the Assembly Majority Leader in the New York State Assembly, Leonard Brock, from the Anti-Poverty Initiative, about child care funding. Because every time we talk anti-poverty, our community asks about child care funding and what the county's obligation is, what the state obligation is, et cetera. Tell our listeners, kind of frame it for us, what happened with this budget, the final budget of the Brooks administration, and your concerns about it when it comes to child care and it comes to cuts, whose responsibility it is. Because Ms. Brooks has said the county is doing as much as it can, but the state has to step in as well. So help us see kind of what happened here.
Well, as it's happened in the past, it was cut, not cut out, but reduced. And that's problematic because we are told that the county in its present state has been funding more than it's required to fund, funding at levels that are the same around the state. And quite frankly, we have a situation here that doesn't exist in other areas of the state. So it's hard to make comparisons as to what the bar really should be for us. Child care funding can go into families that are up to 200% of the poverty rate, depending on what their levels are. And it's consistently that we are only at the 165% rate of the poverty level. And so that in itself, people get missed. And they fund until they can't fund any longer. Then the applications are no longer taken. And if you fall off the list, it's also problematic with the system that's used. And I can't explain how they do it, really. But it is a very complicated system. They'll say that you just have to fill out an application. But if the funding is not there, that application goes to waste. My understanding, I don't want to misquote anyone that's told me this, that application might go to the wayside and you would have to start again if you lost it or were not in the application time when there was money to fund. So it's problematic for people.
What was the cut? I think the cut that I had seen reported was $600,000 or so in this budget cycle, is that right, on child care? Carrie, is that right?
I think the cut was a little bit less in this current budget. The budget before that for 2015 was about that level, and before the year before that, it was over $1 million.
Okay. And the bottom line here is, are we going to see fewer families get the help they need because of the budget? Cindy, you're nodding. Carrie, yes?
Yes, sir? Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. And the county executive has said the county is doing what it can. Everyone is under hard times, and the state has cut, and we need to look to Albany if we want to try to figure out why are more people going to be hurting, that you can't blame a county that's already fiscally stressed. And if the county is fiscally stressed and you're sort of endorsing Tom DiNapoli's report here, then is the county executive right in saying they're doing all they can?
No. Well, no. Sorry to jump in, Cindy.
Go ahead.
I would say no. I mean, the budget is a statement of priorities. You find funding for what you care about, period. I don't think that's disputable. I mean, there are certainly projects that have been funded in the budget that the county executive and the Republican majority prioritized and said, yes, this is what we want to put our money towards. And then there are other things where they choose to cut when they have to cut. I think we can all say, yes, the county is fiscally stressed, but we have to you take the limited resources that are there and you decide what's your priority. The reality is child care has two funding sources, mostly. It's state funding and it's got local funding. We don't get to control what the state does. We do have a say over what the county does. And so while the state may cut funding or increase it, we should lobby for it to increase it, as I think everyone agrees, and we do. And then simultaneously, we should also support local funding at the highest level possible for the county. I don't think we can just look at the state and say, oh, it's all their fault. You know, let's get us off the hook for making these tough choices.
So Cindy, Kerry's out of office, but going forward, next budget cycle, if Brian Marinetti and Anthony Danielli say, we'll play ball with you, we will restore a lot of these cuts, but you've got to help us find places to make up for that number. Where are we going to make up? Point to something in the county right now that shouldn't be spent in favor of, say, child care. Kerry, you want to jump in as well?
Yeah.
It's a long pause.
It was a long pause. You caught me at a...
I'm sorry. I think we're out of budget season a little bit,
yeah.
Too. But, I mean, we've historically looked at things like the long-term leases that the county has for two downtown parking lots that are worth almost $1 million. And yet, I think years ago, they were proposed as a possible site for MCC and then a possible site for the crime lab. And none of that materialized. And yet, we continue to pay... it's almost $1 million a year for that cost. So that would just be one example if we're looking to restore that amount of funding.
Would you be willing to work with them to look for other places, Cindy?
Oh, certainly. We've come up with different ideas in the past. It's my pause was I was expecting a different question when you asked that one. I was like way off on a different answer.
That's right. I know you don't have the entire budget in front of you right now. I'm just thinking offhand, are there obvious targets that you say, if the budget is a statement of priorities, as Kerry Andrews just said, and even a fiscally stressed county is making a statement of priorities, what are we over-prioritizing to the detriment of something like child care?
Well, we've talked about other smaller decreases and economies of small scale and large scale. And one of them was actually looking at the fleet and the sharing of cars within the fleet. We're a good county when it comes to having ecosystems working and cars that are working economically. And the city, under the Duffy administration, went to shared fleet services for individual departments. Now, that may not seem like an awfully long, large amount of money that would be cut, but it also brings in a little bit of a difference in the air of how you're making changes. In other words, you're not cutting out a program. You're not cutting jobs. You're sharing things that you already have that are assets that can help you reduce the monies that are spent going forward. That's one small one.
Another thing I would add is that, you know, it's difficult to get inside the county budget and know exactly where everything is spent. Obviously, we ask a tremendous number of questions during budget season. We get answers to some of those questions. I think the more challenging ones or ones where they actually might say, oh, there is money here, they aren't quite as forthcoming usually with responses to. So with that in mind, I would say throughout the entire LDC mess, I mean, you are talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And who knows what's there, what's been spent that didn't need to be spent, or how much we've now spent defending, or the county's now spent defending itself as a result of those investigations. So clearly there is money that's been spent on those initiatives. And I guess I would just say, who knows if you go through that, what you would find if you had access to those figures.
But wrapped up in the answer you just gave, I think maybe some sense of surprise among listeners who hear you say, as someone who is the Democratic leader in the legislature, that you don't even know all of the budget items and where money is spent, that it's not transparent enough. Just now, granted, a $1 billion budget is a long budget, but it it seems to me what you're saying is that it's not as transparent as maybe it could be. I mean, could it be more transparent?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
I have sent, I mean, over the course of my 10 years, I don't even know how many letters or requests for financial information or that have gone unresponded to. I mean, there's probably piles in a box somewhere.
And how can you, I don't mean to pick on a point here, Carrie, but you are the leader of a party in the legislature. And you said you didn't feel disrespected. But they didn't even respond to your request for information on basic budgeting?
I didn't feel disrespected as a person. Basic budgeting questions are responded to, tons and tons of questions. It's just my personal opinion is anything that's very, quote, juicy or controversial might be on the edge of really touching somewhere. Like, how much has the county spent on the law firm of Dennis Vacco representing it through the LDC matter? I don't know how many times we've asked for that figure,
and
never once come back. And there's no way to compel somebody in the administration to answer a question. I'm not going to, stalk them or right outside the office at all hours of the night. And so if they don't want to provide sensitive information that we feel we're entitled to, then that's what happens, unfortunately. I mean, that's one of the realities of being in the minority and working with an administration that was not all the time forthcoming with sensitive information.
All right, let me get to the phones. And this is Beth in Brighton. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi, Evan. I'd like to go back to the LDC. The Leawood voters got CGR to sponsor two studies about LDCs, and it goes well beyond those two that are being looked at. They're two amazing studies. You might want to get Kent Gardner on the, on your program, because it's well beyond the two that are under corruption charges at the moment. But I think the issue of LDCs is an issue that this county really needs to look at and confront. But I would ask you to look at the two studies first and talk to Kent Gardner, who is, one of the authors of the studies. And I thank you very much for this program.
Well, thanks for the phone call, Beth. Yeah, we'll follow up. I mean, I know that that's still an ongoing question, and we're going on a couple of years now. In fact, 2.5 years. I think it goes back to at least the summer, fall of 2013, when some of the big questions were even being raised. So it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate that, Beth, and we will follow up on that. John in Rochester is next. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Carrie, Cindy. You guys are talking about Tom DiNapoli and the stress, Monroe County being one of the most stressed counties in the state as far as our financial situation goes, which leads me to the question of financial control board. I talked to Cheryl DiNolfo and also Sandy Frankel about that when they were, and the other candidate too. I can't remember who that was now.
Rajesh Barnabas from the Green Party.
Yes, about financial control boards and how successful they were in the city of Buffalo and in Erie County. If in fact DiNapoli has designated Monroe County at that level of stress, I would think as a legislature, you should really study Erie County in putting together or studying a financial control board. It was very highly successful, especially in the city of Buffalo and also in Erie County. And in fact, I think the city of Buffalo commercial property tax rates are, I think, about 40% less than they are in Monroe County and the city of Rochester. So financial control boards can do a lot and should be studied. What are your thoughts there?
John, thank you for the phone call. Are we close to a financial control board in this county? Could that happen in the next 5 years?
I don't know. I mean, the finances are certainly stressed. I don't know if they're as stressed as Buffalo or Erie counties were. And there always do seem to be new sources of revenue. There's the gaming revenue that's now coming into the county that wasn't there a couple of years ago. In this year's budget, there's projected money from medical marijuana that's in the county's budget. I don't know. I think things certainly aren't going well. I mean, I'm a big proponent of local government making local decisions, so I wouldn't be an advocate for a financial control board at this point in time, but we'll have to see what decisions get made in the near term.
Cindy?
I agree. I don't think I could have added anything to that at this point.
I guess, John, to your question on, you know, what the candidates thought, during the debate on WXXI, the Voice of the Voter debate, I asked all three candidates, do you think that we could see a control board situation in the next 5 years? None of them said yes. Not even Mr. Barnabas. Sandy Frankel said she didn't think that, you know, we're kind of going in that direction. So, you know, maybe they're right. I think as a county taxpayer, I hope that's true. Mm-hmm. And the current county executive, Cheryl Donolfo, said that she thought it was way overplayed, the fiscal stress, that we are going in a good direction, that it's going to continue to get better. So I don't know, John, but...
Well, you know, I would add to that, if we continued in the direction that we were heading in or in the stress that we have, and we weren't looking at an influx of dollars into the area, certainly with photonics and job creation and the anti-poverty initiative, all these things are creating a bit of an influx of funding, to say the least, with job creation that will continue and hopefully increase over the next 5 to 6 years or more. And, you know, that can kind of even things off. So I think they may be correct in saying that based on what is coming into the area at this point.
Okay. David writes and says, what we need is a unified Democratic Party from the top down to be just as organized as Republicans. We haven't seen that in years. That's from David. That is not from a David Gant, by the way. But David Gant was on this program recently. And David Gant, of course, longtime state assemblyman. We spent the last year having conversations about, you know, could the Democrats win elections on the county level in November of 2015? And it didn't happen, and it hasn't happened in a long time. And, you know, Jamie Romeo, who's got a really tough job, I think, as the new county party chair, said, you know, she thinks those divisions are overblown, that there can be unification. David Gant comes on this program and said that he essentially indicated he thinks maybe the Democratic Party isn't worth his time. And then he said, he used the term those racists in the Democratic Party. I said, who is he talking about? He said, ask them. So I didn't get a chance to follow up, unfortunately. But it was not a good moment. It was sort of a tough moment. David Gant's an important figure, a strong figure, a powerful figure. So let me ask two Democrats in the room. This isn't about David Gant versus anybody else, but this is about whether the party is unified enough to win future elections, to be successful legislatively. You know, Cindy, you know, you're the leader of the Democrats in the legislature now, and again, you're in the minority. But how do you view your party? You know, David, a different David, emails me today and says, we need unification top-down. Republicans are organized. They win. Do you feel Democrats are organized enough? I mean, it certainly does look divided.
Well, I think that there's always room for improvement based on my colleagues going forward. I think what you have is a coalition of a lot of different backgrounds, but seem to be on the same wavelength when it comes to moving forward and working with the county and improving things. And I think that if we can do that in a collaborative way with the other side of the aisle, that begins to show that we have a good collaboration of Democrats that are working at the county level. Okay. It's always more difficult. There are more Republicans in the outer part of the area. There are more Democrats on the inner part of the area. But I think that we are on the right track going forward. I do.
Okay. Carrie?
Yeah, I want to compliment the work that Jamie Romeo is doing as chair. I think, you know, she's young, articulate, smart, hardworking, energetic. And even through these winter months when things are usually kind of slow, she's putting forth a lot of new initiatives. And I think she's a great face for our party going forward, especially in this year where we're more likely to see younger people get more interested in politics, people pay attention to the presidential race. And we need to tap into that enthusiasm that's out there and then keep those newer volunteers interested in the next year when it's more of a local year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, certainly there are challenges that the Democratic Party faces. The Republican Party, I think nationally, I would argue, faces significant challenges right now. And I would be very curious to see what local Republicans think about their party at large.
You know, it's interesting. The last week or two, that question's come up a lot. And I wonder if someone will follow up on that. But I don't know the answer to that. you know, will local leaders support such and such on the national level? It's good. You know, that's a good question.
But. Right. I'm very curious about that issue. But I think as local Democrats, you know, we're going to continue to do our best. I'm not going to deny that there are divisions there, but there's also a lot of things that bring us together. I think some of the things I mentioned earlier in the conversation are why we've had some challenges in our county ledge races and in our countywide races, too.
All right. Well, Cindy Kaley, last word from you. You're the new leader going forward here. It'll be a successful first year for you in leadership if what happens this year. Give me just a benchmark or two that you're looking for this year.
Well, if we're a part of the conversation with the issues that we have at hand, and that was most importantly or singularly the Office of Public Integrity and working on that, working on the LDC issue in collaboration.
Okay, so part of those conversations, a little bit more involvement, I guess. And we'll see what moves. And I hope, Cindy, the next time you're here, I hope your colleagues from the Republican leadership are here, too.
Me, too.
Cindy says she'll be here. So Brian Marinetti and Anthony Danielli are helping lead the Republican Party on the legislature. And again, if you missed it earlier, we reached out to leadership outgoing and incoming on all sides. And Republicans just said they couldn't get anyone available today. But again, I hope that changes going forward. It's an open door for them, for our listeners, for Cindy. Carrie, I know we'll see you down the line.
Sure. I'd be happy to be back sometime.
And Carrie Andrews, a labor relations specialist with NYSET, which means she's just as busy as she's probably ever been.
That's very true.
Short break, dialogue on disability continues next on Connections.